Well, good morning, and thanks for tuning in to 88.5 KRFY. This is the morning show. We are live here in the studios of KRFY, and this I'm Susie Prez, one of your hosts here this morning.
And I'm your co-host, Susie, Chris Bessler. Good morning. How are you doing?
Good morning on this beautiful Wednesday, April 19th.
You know what? It's a bit foggy this morning, but I was above the fog early on, and I can see we're going to have a nice day. It's much my prediction.
I think you're right, because it does say patchy fog in the morning and mostly sunny from the National Weather Service, but we'll get to that in a minute. We have a really exciting, and I want to say we're very grateful that our guests this morning have come in to share their interest in being candidates, and they're candidates now, but serving on the Lake Pend'Oreille School Board as trustees. I want to say hi and good morning to Carrie Kelly.
Good morning. Nice to be here.
Good morning. Thanks for coming in. And Anita Perry.
Good morning. And thank you for having us.
Nice to have you. And this is Zone 5, and you both live in Zone 5, and folks that live in Zone 5 can vote for you for the school candidate position.
Yeah, we should clarify that. We are going to be covering in a series of three shows two other races as well, Zone 2 and 3, but you can only vote for the trustee candidates in your zone. So those zone boundaries are important. Zone 5 covers downtown Sandpoint and an area headed west to Dover, but not all the way west. So to really know where you are, what zone you might fall in for this election, you can go to a few sources. The Bonner County Elections web page has got maps. Also, the Sandpoint Online Elections page has maps and descriptions as well. Or you could call the county elections office at 255-3631. We'll talk a little bit more about the mechanics in a little bit as we come back and talk to today's candidates, Carrie Kelly and Anita Perry. But Susie, give us a word on the weather, please.
The weather from the National Weather Service, currently it's foggy out there. So put on your lights when you're driving in or around the county. It's 36 degrees, patchy fog, mostly sunny today, high of 58. The fog should last till 8 a.m., so it should be going away right now. And then after that, mostly sunny. And again, high of 58 with light winds. Tonight, increased clouds with a low around 38 and light and variable winds. Thursday and Thursday night, 70 and 50% chance of precipitation. Showers likely. High of 51 on Thursday, low of 38 on Thursday night. I'm trying to move us over towards Saturday where I see more sunshine. I'm just going to skip Friday. Only 20% chance of rain and partly sunny. But then on Saturday, because I really like saying mostly sunny, high of 61 on Saturday.
Yeah, especially on a weekend.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Other things going on outside. The sun rose this morning at 5:49 a.m. It'll set tonight at 7:41 p.m. The days are getting longer, and in fact, over the course of the last week, we've gained 24 minutes of daylight per day. Woohoo! Gotta love that. And Lake Pend'Oreille is still at 2056.25 feet. It's been holding steady the last 7 days, but we can expect the lake level will be coming up as some of the spring runoff starts to be captured. Up in the skies, the last quarter moon is going to be tomorrow night. It's going to be tonight, last quarter moon. And if we have clear skies, I don't know if you've spotted it, Susie, but late at night, the moon's been coming up, and it's been really yellow when it comes up. It's been really kind of pretty.
And before we get to our interview, which you can introduce, Chris, I just want to say that a number of folks have called in or emailed in questions that we'll try to get to at the end of the official kind of formal interview that we have planned here this morning. So stay tuned to that. Also, if you can't sit through the whole interview and you want to hear it all because you want to be an informed voter here in our Zone 5 today, you can go to our website later on and we are recording this and it will be a podcast under the podcast button. And that website is krfy.org.
And with that, let's get into today's interview. Again, we have the two school district trustee candidates for the Lake Pend'Oreille School District, Anita Perry and Carrie Kelly. Thank you again both for coming in. And so we're going to run, go back and forth with questions, give you guys equal time to talk as we proceed through some of the questions we have. And why don't we start off with you, Carrie, since Anita's microphone is not behaving here at the moment. And we'd like to take a couple minutes just to introduce yourself to the voters. It's open mic. Tell people a little bit about your qualifications and why they should vote for you.
Okay, thank you very much. And again, it's nice to be here this morning. I'm Kerry Kelly. I've been a resident of Bonner County for 24 years. My wife and I moved here after a military career that I had, in which we lived all over the United States. I have two children, and they followed us in later years to Sandpoint. Five grandchildren, all of which went to public schools here in Sandpoint. So I am coming off a four-year tour at the commissioner's office, and I'm running for office here for school board trustee because I value education, and I think I'm qualified for the job, and I have time for it now that I'm retired, so I'm looking forward, if elected, to the next 4 years.
Okay. Are there any, you mentioned that you've been a county commissioner, so you've held elective office. Are there any nonprofit or service groups you might want to mention that might be a point of qualification for folks?
Well, right now I'm on the board of directors for the Panhandle Animal Shelter is what I'm doing now. And I've been there for, I guess, 3 months now.
Okay, great. Thank you. Anita Perry, microphone is yours if you'd like to introduce yourself to the voters.
Yes, thank you for having me. My husband and I moved here 12 years ago, and we wanted to retire in a quiet place, as far away from freeways as we could get, and we found it here in Sandpoint. And it came with a lake, so we're very happy about that. I spent most of my working life in public administration, and so I immediately gravitated towards civic organizations that dealt with public policy and similar things. I am to get into your volunteering question, I immediately joined CAL, the Community Assistance League, and I'm a member to this day. I've volunteered many years in their bazaar. Then I became interested in the Bonner County Republican Women, mainly because a neighbor of mine belonged to it. And I ended up being president of that group for 2 years, and I'm still on the board. And because of my interest in grassroots politics, I also became a member of the Bonner County Republican Central Committee, and I'm currently a precinct committee woman there, and I've served on that board as a secretary for 2 years. I've served on intermittent committees in all of those organizations, and I also served Bonner County as a member of the Ad Hoc Property Rights Council.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. I guess our first question, you've kind of answered it, but I'll ask it again. You could go into a little bit more. But the first question is, why are you running for trustee? And I also am curious, how much time can you devote to that? And Anita, why don't you go first?
Well, I'm retired, so my time is mine. And my interest in running was generated when I was actually interested in these civic organizations. I started attending town hall meetings and city council meetings and school board meetings just to see what goes on in the community. And while I was attending school board meetings, I saw that even though this community really values education, I also saw the divide that existed, and it was visible in the audience of those meetings, the divide in how the schools should be run. So after attending them regularly for the last year and a half, I decided when an opening came up, I would step in. And this year, three incumbents stepped down. So I am running for one of those positions.
Okay. Thank you. Kerry, same question to you. Why are you running for school board trustee, and how much time can you devote to the
position?
Well,
first of all, I mentioned the fact that I value education. I actually moved here to be a high school teacher. Before I retired from the service, I went back to school. I spent 2 years getting a teaching certificate, a master's degree in education, And I came here and applied for a job as a social studies teacher, 6 through K. And as I say, before that, I spent 6 months actually in the classroom teaching at the high school that where I lived. There weren't any jobs available at the time, so I was a substitute teacher in both the middle school and high school here for several months. Winter came and opportunities opened up at the sheriff's department, so I ended up spending 22 years with the county instead. But education has always been close to my heart. I've always wanted to be involved in it. I have 5 grandkids. They've all been in public school here, so I follow them through their scholastic career here. 2 of them are in college now. 1 more will be off to college next year. Another 1 the year after that. So I have been connected to the school and what's been going on through my children and my grandchildren. But what I like to see, I think the school district has made headway in the last several years. They've really come a long way. I think they're doing an outstanding job overall. And what I'd like to do is continue what's going on in the schools and bring it to an even higher level as far as student achievement and solve some of the obvious problems that they have as far as facilities and facilities maintenance and things like that, as we're all aware of because of the plant maintenance levy that they had in the summer, past summer.
One of the questions to follow up is, how much time do you feel that you would have to donate to that?
I can say I'd have all the time that's necessary. Okay.
Well,
I'm retired.
You both said you're retired, so
retired.
We're gonna mark that down as much as you need.
I don't go away for the winter. Yeah. I'm here all the time.
So this is kind of a follow up question that both of you have alluded to. But do you believe the district is doing a good job or a poor job in educating students, and why? And I'm not sure which one we go to first.
I can't answer it already.
Yeah. I think they're doing an excellent job.
Yeah.
By performance of actually firsthand my grandchildren, but also what we've been reading lately in the paper, what's going on scholastically with our clubs, all our teams, the extracurricular activities that our students are involved in. I think certainly that our school district is one of the top in the state. So I would like to see it remain there and continue on.
Okay. Same question to you, Anita. Do you believe the district is doing a good job or a poor job in educating students, and why?
I think they're doing a good job. I always think there's room for improvement. And particularly, I would like to see more emphasis placed on trade education. We are placing a lot of emphasis on college education, and not every student is suited to that. I see a lot of students that that really have aptitude for regular trades, and we certainly need a lot of those. I know in Idaho we have right now 20,000 jobs open that are available, and 4,300 of those are hard to fill. And those hard to fill jobs, this is according to the Labor Department, they run the gamut from truck drivers to healthcare workers to surgeons and high paying jobs like that. So our schools keeping an eye on that, I think tailoring our education to where the jobs are would make it great for our students to be able to stay in the community, earn some money, and not have to go somewhere else to make money.
Okay. Thank you. Well, here's a follow-up question. It's kind of along the same vein, but can you describe the top 3 to 5 issues you believe our school district is facing, and the reasons that you're actually want to get involved? And why don't we start with you, Anita?
Well, I've addressed the education issue. That's one of mine. I would say another important one that I place a lot of interest in and want to see done is the transparency. There's a perception in the community that the school district is not as transparent as it could be. And we see this as a prime example in that levy that got defeated last August. There was so little transparency in how it was rolled out. There was a committee put in place, and it was put in place by the superintendent. The individuals on that committee, about 13 of them, were almost completely either directly in the school district or closely affiliated with it. And according to the chair of the committee, they deliberately kept the public out because they thought it would lead to chaos. And that's not being transparent. And needless to say, when it was rolled out then, the public felt left out, hit over the head, and it went down. So I think that's an example we can use as, let's be transparent from the start and get people involved from the minute you decide, okay, we need to revamp our buildings. How do we go about it? What do you guys think?
Okay, thank you. Same question to you, Carrie Kelly. Can you describe the top 3 to 5 issues that you believe are facing our school?
I would put at the top of the list. Oh, let me also say that I agree with Anita as far as the what they call now is a career technical education, which is for those students that don't go on to post-secondary academic institutions. We need to do more. We are doing quite a bit already so that we're keeping some of our students, high school students, trained and keeping them in the area. Overall, I think first would be academic achievement. That's always at the top. It goes back to the basics. Make sure that all our students are getting an adequate, basic, good, solid secondary education. The next one is the budget and levies, our facilities. I think the plant levy that was last August pointed out the fact that we have severe deficiencies in our facilities. We need an overall plan to upgrade our schools where necessary. It's going to take a long time, a lot of study. Much of the groundwork was done back then. The surveys were done. I think we know what the needs are, but we need to put that together in a way in which we can accomplish it gradually and then how to fund it. I think that's going to be the biggest challenge for the next board.
Okay, thank you.
I wanted to add, I only listed 2 of the topics that I think are important.
Okay, sure, follow up.
The long-range planning is important. What we saw, the reason we even came into this $55 million levy was because of the lack of maintenance that had been done for the last 10 years. And, Steve Youngdahl, the chair of the current board, he admitted it. He says, yes, we have kicked the can down the road for about the last 10 years on maintenance, and it's coming back to haunt us now. So let's prevent that, and let's just go into regular maintenance. I know that in this budget we've set aside some money for maintenance, and that needs to be built up so it's not spent on other things. I have no idea where all the money went that was supposed to go into maintenance over 10 years, but it doesn't need to happen that way.
Okay, thank you. Carrie, would you like a follow-up on that?
Well, I agree with that, and I think one of the examples was all of a sudden they needed numerous buses all need to be replaced. Well, you need a preventive maintenance program going on, and I've dealt with this with, for example, the county has 300 vehicles. Now, you can imagine what situation it would be if they all need to be replaced at once. It needs a long-term maintenance preventive program. As far as capital expenditures, sure, they need some kind of budget for that, and it should be done. As Anita mentioned, you kick the can down the road, eventually it's going to catch up to you. You're going to have to pay. So this is another thing needs to be looked at, is how they allocate their money. And I will say there are a lot of parallels to running a county and running a school district, as far as the budget, the employees, the number, how to get together, the bureaucracy, the state mandates. It's all things I'm very familiar with, and I think that would be a value on the board.
Okay, thank you. Well, you guys keep getting ahead of me on my questions a little bit, but our next question here was, so last August, the school district did propose a $55 million plant facility levy. Specifically, it was to rebuild Sandpoint Middle School, the North Side School, most Washington school, and address a bunch of other facility and maintenance needs district-wide. So it's very ambitious. The levy failed with 65% voting against it, so it wasn't even close. So my question here would be, did you vote for or against the levy? And you've kind of talked about this already, but do you believe the levy was addressing real needs, and how should the district fund replacement and repair schools? And Anita, you want to go first on that one?
Sure. I think the reason it failed is because the public was immediately aware that, as the school district pointed out in their chart, that my school taxes are going to double overnight and for the next 5 years. And that was only phase one that was going to happen. So that scared people. And I think it scared a lot of people that actually work for the schools, because, as some of them said, this has the potential of driving me out of my home. I can't afford it. So I think that in the way the levy was justified did not ring true with people. What they want to hear is, how can we go about it in a way that we can afford? And I think most everybody agreed we can afford one school at a time. So let's proceed down that road. And, you know, we have lottery money coming in that is specifically for school construction. So let's use some of that. We can also use the funding that comes through a bond. This time around, the school district explored a new funding measure that hadn't been tried before. And it came into being because there was a court decision back in October of 2015 that allowed something other than bonds to be used, and they exploited that. Which is fine. It was all legal, but it did not make sense to people that we don't need to go down this road with this many buildings all at the same time. I think the school district will have a chance to pass a facilities levy with resounding success if they go for one school at a time.
Okay, thank you. One point of clarification. Did you support or oppose
it? I support it. I did not support the facilities levy.
As it was presented. Okay.
Yes.
Same question to you, Carrie. The school board proposed a $55 million plant levy, and it failed. Did you vote for or against it? Do you believe the levy was addressing real needs? And how should the district fund the replacement?
Under duress of my family, I voted for the levy. But let me just say, and I've been on the school board, I would not have supported this going to the public. It was too big, a chunk to take at one time. It was somewhat poorly planned. I agree with Anita. It wasn't explained enough, early enough on in the process to the public. It was just a lot. It doesn't mean that there weren't needs in there, and I think there were, and I think we need to address them in the future. But, it was just, and I think probably going for a type of facilities bond rather than a levy in the future, maybe in the next couple of years, may be the way to go, where you can spread the cost over a longer period of time, do it gradually, but it takes a higher percentage to vote. Take 66% to do it. That's the disadvantage.
So I'll ask each a little follow-up question. So I think one reason they proposed the big, gigantic $55 million levies, they're afraid that a series of levies might pass, but some might fail. Is that a potential problem, do you think? And Carrie, why don't you take that question, if we go on a one school at a time?
Well, I think that is a problem. You have a, right now we have a levy that we need to pass just to keep operating at the current level, which is kind of a given. Now, maybe we should turn that into a permanent levy rather than a two-year levy. You know, we need to look at that. But as far as the building and infrastructure we have, that's completely separate. And that, again, that needs to be addressed. You have to take a look at the what the needs are, how long a period of time you do, what you think is a reasonable amount that you could get passed. It all needs to be taken a look at. It's going to be quite a problem, I think, to solve.
Same question to you, Anita. Is there a risk that some schools will get improved, but some won't because voters would have to basically approve each individual levy?
I think they will, as long as you make a convincing case that it's necessary. For instance, in this facilities levy, the schools were ranked in order of which one needs it the most. And actually, the number one school in dire need was the alternative high school. And yet that was not on the list to be rebuilt or significantly modified. I think there were only like $40,000 allocated to that out of $55 million. The second highest was the middle school, the second highest priority, and that one was going to be $28 million. That's a really high amount. I think if you're going to pass that one, you're going to have to come up with some significant justification why the school will need that much of an investment. And again, it comes down to explaining it to the public. Here's the problem, and here's why we think rebuilding it is better than modifying it.
Okay. And to remind our listeners, this is the 88.5 KRFY Morning Show with hosts Chris and Susie, and we're speaking this morning with the school trustee candidates for Zone 5. That's Anita Perry and Carrie Kelly. And again, thank you both for being here. And to push on with more questions, as long as we're talking about levies, just on March 14th, we passed a supplemental instructional levy, and it passed with 64% in favor, kind of a flop with in the results with the plant facility levy last August. So the question would be, did you vote for or against this levy, and why? And that would go to you first, Carrie, please.
I strongly supported the levy. I wrote letters to the editor, and I did what I could to see that it get passed, because to me, this is essential. It's about a third of the budget, and it's just there would be drastic consequences if we didn't have it. So I strongly supported it. Now, you can take a look at individual items and argue about those, and there may be some validity in some of the complaints that we had. There were complaints about transparency. I didn't note any. I went online and got all the information I needed. But I do think in the planning process for a levy or for the budget, we need to get the public involved at an earlier stage. By the time it's presented to the board, to the trustees, it's too late. We need to have public meetings when it's first formulated of what's going to be, for example, the activities budget, which includes all your extracurricular activities and things like this. There are a lot of opinions about it. There are a lot of support. There are a lot of people that question it. And those are the kind of things I think that need to be fleshed out ahead of time. So when it is presented, there's a fixed number and it can be justified and people are aware of it. Yes, but I strongly supported it. And I will say for Zone 5, my zone, in the precincts we have, 80% were for the levy.
Mm. Okay. Thank you. Anita, same question to you. The $17 million supplemental instructional levy passed March 14th. Did you support or oppose that, and why?
On this particular levy, because I sat through the seven school board meetings that discussed it, and I followed the process from beginning to end, I watched how the seven different proposals were rolled out at first, starting all the way at from 19 million and dropping down to where the previous levy sat at 15 point some million. After listening to that, and I know we eventually settled at 17 million, I was not convinced that 17 million was the way to go. And I told that to Superintendent Woodward. I said, I will gladly vote for the $15 million levy, but I can't support this after listening to what has been going on in the explanations we were given.
So I have a little bit of a follow-up question, and it is one that sort of came in from a listener, but it really folds into this. You both indicated more transparency and involvement earlier in the process of the levy comes up with more public meetings. And obviously, it would be the board's job to facilitate these kind of public forums that mm-hmm. would bring more involvement by the citizens and input, is what you both indicated. How would you do that? It seemed like there were some opportunities for the citizens to be informed of the process and what's going on with the supplemental, and how could they do it better? And I guess we'll start with Anita.
Okay. Every school board meeting is announced through the agenda that's posted on the website. Other than that, you will not find an announcement anywhere. There's none in the paper, none on any media that I have found. So what I think for these important meetings that deal with levies or with major curriculum changes, I think that the school district should place an ad in the newspaper and get the public interested. Right now, there's only usually about 10 or 12 citizens that regularly attend the school board meetings and inform themselves because they have an interest in education, and I'm one of them. But the rest of the population is absolutely unaware that anything is coming down the pike. And until they actually hear, you know, from, okay, we have another levy vote coming up on March 14th. So at that point, you know, it's too late. And then you see the signs popping up saying, vote for schools. Vote for what? You know, it's not good communication. So I would strongly recommend that communication take place. Publicity needs to be made. What I saw in this particular last levy, in the first meeting or so when the extracurricular activities were being discussed, all the players, the students, the coaches, and everyone, they showed up. They testified, we want this, we don't want it to go away. The citizens were not there. They were not informed. Everybody who had a stake in it came out. So we want to make sure the citizens are the stakeholders who are paying for this are also involved.
It's Carrie, same question. How would you do more to promote transparency?
Well, what they need to do is when they have these meetings, in the county we have workshops. We have 23 funds. We have a separate meeting. It's publicized. It's put on the agenda. The public is involved. We go through, this is the very beginning of the budget, whether it's the sheriff's office or whether it's the prosecutor's office, it goes down. And I will say, we beg and beg the public to be there. We let them know. I'll tell you, nobody shows up. We have, when we finalize our budget on the last day, we're required by statute to have a meeting at 8 in the morning and again at 8 o'clock at night, twice a day. We've had our whole staff is there. Everybody that's a fund manager is there. So we have like 30 or 35 county employees. We've had times where there's been one citizen. But I do think we should make it available. And I do think it should be, transparent in the sense that it's available to the public. There may be a few that actually show up, but it is very, very difficult to get people to attend these, take the time out of their they're busy, they're working, they have families, they're doing other things, and to get a chance to go do it. So and I do think those that are interested enough had plenty of time to get information. And you're granted, maybe we could have advertised it better, but I think it's all online, gobs of information, and people take the time to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But when I talk about, I think workshops is the way to do it.
And how would you... with this same thought in mind, encourage people to get involved? As you say, they just don't seem to come to these open public meetings. How can we, and we can start with Kelly or Carrie, how can we encourage and get a little bit more of that involvement?
Well, I think making it known either on websites, publish it in the paper, but put what the issues are,
mm-hmm.
what is going to be discussed. We're talking about sports programs, okay? We're allocating money for sports. Okay, the football team produces revenue, the baseball team doesn't. How are we going to put it together and even it out so that everybody there is going to be able to participate in sports that wants to? I think a little more information like that about what really is at stake may draw out some of the public to attend these things.
And Anita, the same question, encouraging involvement.
Right. Making the subject of that particular meeting available to the public And I might mention there's a community service, I don't know if you offer it on KRFY, but I know Blue Sky Radio offers a community calendar where you can place free ads of meetings as a public service announcement, and why not put it there?
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. And that is a kind of a $64 question, is how to get the public involved on these things, that's for sure.
I actually have a little bit tiny follow-up question. Mm. If you're both from Zone 5, how will you know what your Zone 5 folks that you represent, how they feel about an issue? How will you find that out?
Well, we find out through the elections office how many people turned out to vote in, say, a levy election or in the previous school board election or in any election. And from, for instance, the last levy election in Zone 5, as Carrie said, overwhelming majority voted for the supplemental levy. So you know where they stand on that. And I think a lot of it was due to misinformation. I don't think they had the correct story. If they had, this might have turned out differently. But again, it comes down to communication and information. I know the school district has an interest in having the levies pass, but citizens need to be informed of what is the story. There are two sides to every story. And I don't think that was sufficiently out there.
Carrie, same question to you. How would you connect with your constituents within
Zone? Well, I would say the same thing there. But, of course, you know, I think as a trustee, you should be available for anybody to contact you, whether by the telephone or by online or through the website at the school or your email there. They should be available all the time. Any questions should be asked. I mean, if you're a trustee, you're on duty 24/7 as far as
when you're shopping at Safeway,
being available to your constituency if they have questions about mm-hmm. the school district.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. Well, since a lot of the, I'd say, debate over the schools has to do with costs and ways to bring down costs, would you support some specific ideas that have been proposed and are controversial? But one would be to close the rural schools, such as Clark Fork or North Side or South Side, that are more remote and the costs are higher per student there. Or would you support increasing class sizes in order to achieve cost savings? Or would you support saving money on extracurricular activities such as athletics by charging fees for kids to participate? Those are three ideas that have been floated out and are, as I said, rather controversial. But why don't we start with you, Carrie, on those?
I would not support closing any of the rural schools. I think unless it really got to a point where it's just there are no students left. But I think they're very important. I think the people that live in those areas want them and need them. I would not support larger class sizes, particularly in the lower grades where you need smaller classes. The lower you get, you need the smaller classes. So I wouldn't support that either. And the third part of your question was?
About charging for participation extracurricular activities.
I wouldn't support that either. I think every student should, regardless of means, should be able to participate in extracurricular activities.
Okay. Same trio of questions to you, Anita, if you'd like me to repeat. To save money, closing rural schools or saving money by having larger class sizes or saving money by charging kids for extracurricular activities.
I think to say that we need to close schools is way, way premature and out of line, because what I know of some of the rural schools is that they're very good schools. Clark Fork High School, for instance, has an excellent record. And it's not that simple anyway. It's not like we can say, okay, we're going to close these schools, because the parents, the citizens in those schools, in those school zones, have to vote on it in a separate election. And that's not very well known. In fact, that was a surprise to some teachers during the last levy meetings, because everyone was concerned that, oh, wow, we're going to have to close schools if this levy doesn't pass. No, we don't. And I would not support closing schools. Interestingly, though, I would say that I think it was about a year and a half ago when we were talking at a school board meeting, the superintendent was laying out the enrollment data, and he was pointing out that one elementary school down in the south end of the district, and I can't remember if it was Southside or Sagal, had lost 40 students just like that. And he was throwing out the suggestion that perhaps we could consider combining those schools, which means closing one of them. And there was silence in the room. No one went any further with it, and he has never mentioned it again. So that thought actually originated with the superintendent. I'm against it. The second part was...
Support larger class sizes in order to economize?
Right now, it's interesting. Mr. Woodward mentioned that they are teaching second and sixth grade together. I believe it was at Farman School. And he said it was working exceedingly well for the student, working out very well. So I think it would depend on just what class size you're talking about. When I went to school, we had routinely 40 kids. I mean, it was post-World War II. There was a baby boom going on. We had 40 kids in the classroom, and it was that was routine. So it depends. I know things are different today, but... I would not totally rule it out.
Okay. And then finally, would you support charging fees for extracurricular activities like athletics?
I don't want to get too much in the weeds on that, because I think we need to really study that and see where that would be necessary, feasible, and doable.
Okay. Good.
You were referring to a classroom situation at Farman Stidwell. That's a special kind of pilot program that they've established. Mm-hmm. It's grades 2 through 6 that they've combined specifically for a trial, and it's right. Working actually very well.
It's working well, yes.
But it is very different. It's not a specific classroom. You know, it's different.
That's the experiential learning program.
Right.
That is a kind of a different educational philosophy.
It's a model.
Here's a good follow-up on that. What changes, if any, would you seek in the district's curriculum? And we could start with you, Anita, on that one.
Well, I opposed Common Core from the start. I did not like that program. I don't like the way it was brought into the state, the way it was brought into the schools. It was complicated. They needed an instructional person to travel around the state just to explain it to the teachers. So what does that say about how to explain it to the students? And then comes the testing part. The SBAC test, that's the Smarter Balance Assessment Consortium test, was really reviled by a lot of parents, mainly because they did not know the results. They were not allowed to know the results of the testing. The teachers weren't allowed to know the results. So this rankled a lot of people, and there was some data collection going on. Aside from that, the pilot programs for Common Core that took place before it even came into our state were devastating. From elite schools in Manhattan to Kentucky, the results were poor. So why are we doing this? And so I'm hoping that we will have a curriculum change at some point, because right now I don't see that this is really the best program.
Same question to you, Carrie.
Okay, you said curriculum. I don't take that to mean testing necessarily. I took it to mean courses that are given there. And what I would say, I don't know of any major changes that are necessary right now in the curriculum. Now, one of the programs they do have is called Career Technical Education, which is getting more into vocational, and I certainly support that. I think that's something that we need to look at for many of our students that aren't going on to college. So I support all those programs. But when it comes to curriculum, I think we need to get back to the basics, stress the basics, English, math, science, history, foreign languages. That's the core. That's what we need to focus on.
So was that the focus of your question? Is that curriculum in terms of which courses are being offered?
Yes, actually, that was the intent. Okay. Wasn't specific to Common Core, of course. There's a lot of overlap there. Okay. Would you like to follow up on that?
I just basically touched on it at the beginning of the show that I think, the career technical education and also trade education needs to become more of a focus.
Mm-hmm. And this is kind of a follow-up question from one of our listeners. Would you, as a representative of the school board, the opinion of the state legislator moved to strike new science standards in Idaho education, specifically evolution and global warming. Do you support this, or how do you stand on that issue?
Remember that it came up in the legislature
about striking it. Mm-hmm. To me, science is what it is. Global warming is what it is, and I think it should be taught that way without getting the politics involved. And there is a lot of politics involved. I would stick to clean air and clean water is necessary in the science that goes with that, and get away from the politics.
And what about evolution? Specifically,
I think evolution is here to stay. It's been around for a long time, and I think we need to treat it appropriately.
Okay. And Anita, do you want me to repeat the question?
Yeah, would you?
Okay. A little bit clearer here. Would you please respond to this? Your opinion on the state legislators' move to strike new science standards in Idaho education, specifically evolution and global warming.
I don't think we should deprive our kids of the aspect of evolution or whatever the alternative is, creationism and so forth. I think we need to let kids know that there is a difference in that opinion. As far as the climate change, I know it was stricken and people are fighting very hard to get that put back into the science curriculum. I'm of the opinion that at this point in time, because it is such a controversial and political issue, that we should not bring it into the science curriculum. It's being trumped up too much as a political thing.
So just to clarify, what you're saying is the science of global warming should not be in science curriculum?
Well, I think they've morphed it from global warming to climate change because global warming didn't pan out, and therefore the new word is climate change. I have no problem with climate change because climate has been changing forever, and so that needs to be pointed out. As long as it's taught as, okay, climate is changing, but what the real reason is for changing is should not be put down as settled science, that it's humans who are causing it. No.
Okay, thank you. We've got probably time for just a couple more questions. Here's another question that was sent in from a listener, and I guess we'll start with you, Carrie. Being a board member means reaching decisions as a group, either by consensus or by vote, and then publicly supporting those decisions going forward, even though you may have been in the minority against them. Can you pledge to support board decisions even if you're personally against them if elected?
Yes. The board acts together. The chairman is the one that kind of keeps order in that. He is the leader. No individual trustee has any authority whatsoever. It's the board that has it. Once the board make a decision, it should be supported by everybody. Now, if somebody can't support it and to the degree where they make that publicly known, then I think they might want to consider resigning.
Okay, thank you. Same question to you, Anita. Do you want me to repeat that? Or can you support board decisions even if you're in a minority?
Well, you have to, because even if I'm in the minority, that decision goes forward and it is what it is. So, no, I'm not going to stand there and yell and scream. My vote will say what I want it to say. So if it's different from the majority, well, that's the way it is. What I've seen, though, is, and this is really a concern for me, when our current school board votes, there is a little bit of debate on issues. However, even the concerns that might be expressed, saying about a levy being too big or whatever, those concerns are apparently by that particular board member, they fall by the wayside because that board member ends up voting pro and with the entire board, not sticking to his opinion and saying, no, I think this levy is too big, and voting no on it. I have not seen this happen.
Okay, thank you. And squeeze in one more question. Then we're going to give you time for a minute or so each to make a final statement of whatever you want to tell the voters. What, if anything, should our schools do about teaching values? Should our district teach about family life or sex education or AIDS? And how should gay and LGBTQ issues be handled? And Anita, why don't we start with you on that one? The question about teaching values. Is that a—
Well, first and foremost, values should be taught in the home. I am in favor of teaching sex education, AIDS education, certainly. The LGBT issue, I think it should be mentioned, but I think it should be mentioned in a neutral way and not in a way that promotes it or denigrates it. So that is my stance on that.
Thank you. Same question to you, Carrie.
Well, of course, we teach values in our schools. Our teachers do it. Excuse me. They're our role models. We teach about integrity and values, persistence, hard work, dedication. These are the people that the children are looking at. They're the role models. So those kind of values, of course, we teach in our schools. And that's why our teachers are so valuable. As far as sex education, of course, our students need to be advised. AIDS, of course, too. It's they need it to know it. It's for a safety protection, a health issue. As far as the gay-lesbian issue, I would say unless it's an issue for some reason in the school that I would just let it be what it is. If it becomes an issue of some sort, then it would have to be addressed. But I think we need to really make sure that all our students are treated with tolerance and respect for everybody. And the teachers and the whole culture needs to inculcate that in our students and make sure that that's the environment that they're in.
Okay. Thank you. And so we have just a little bit of time left. We can give you about a minute each to give us a final statement. Carrie, why don't you go first to tell the voters what you'd like to tell them? Why should they vote for you?
Well, let me just say it'd be a real privilege to be on the school board. You have some very, very good candidates. I know all of them. I met all of them. I've heard them talk. And I'd just like to thank all of them for running. So you have, I think, some really good choices for the school board. I have the time to do it and the dedication, and I think particularly the experience in the last 4 years as a commissioner running an organization that's very similar to the school district would be of value. So I ask for your vote if you live in Sandpoint. I appreciate
Zone
that,
5,
and thank you very much for having me here.
Okay. Thank you. Anita.
I would also say that I agree with Carrie that we have some very good candidates running in all zones, and I'm pleased about that. I think I bring a particular perspective to the schools because I have, other than my regular attendances at the school board meetings and my personal interest in education that goes clear back to my childhood, other than that, I have not been affiliated with the schools, but I understand where they're coming from, and I think I can make a difference from a citizen's perspective, someone who has not been closely aligned with the schools, And I think that's what we need on this board. I'd be very honored to serve on this board.
Thank you very much. Anita Perry, Carrie Kelly, candidates for Zone 5, Lake Pendre School District trustee seat that is up for election on May 16th. And I want to tell our listeners, we are going to have two more morning shows devoted to the races. On May 3rd, we're going to be talking with the candidates for Zone 3. That's Lonnie Williams and Victoria Zeischeg. And on May 10th, we'll be talking to the candidates for Zone 2. That's Richard Miller and Gary Supiger. So please tune in for those, especially if you live in those zones. But even if you don't live in those zones, this is going to affect education district-wide. So it's a very important election to be following.
To get involved, and your vote does count. You can go to 255-3631 to find out more about what zone you're in and where to vote. I just want to remind our listeners, this is 88.5 KRFY. This has been the morning show with Chris and Susie, and thank you to our guests. This evening, I will be hosting a volunteer training here at the radio station. So if you're interested in becoming a volunteer and eventually even a broadcaster, give us a call, 265-2992. Also, at 4 o'clock today, I'll be interviewing a band that will be playing at the Panada Theater tonight. A very interesting band. I think they have a Grammy nod coming up. It's called Yarn. So tune in at 4 at 88.5 KRFY to hear a live interview in the studio. That will be a lot of fun.
Band makes me think of knitting for some reason.
I know, and I teach knitting at the Waldorf School. So, yeah, that's why I took that interview on. And we just want to thank our listeners for tuning in. And next week on our show, Chris, we're going to have Tom Carty in, and he's going to introduce his podcast and his exclusive interview with Sue Vogelsinger.
Yeah, I read about that in the newspaper.
You did.
It was in the big front page Sunday story. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, and Tom was in the studio yesterday for an interview with myself. I was interviewed, actually, as his mentor. So that was really fun. So tune in next Wednesday for that exclusive with Sue Vogelsinger. She was in the Kennedy White House. So really interesting things that she said. We're going to go out with a tune by the Beatles. It's called Ticket to Ride. And the reason is it was released on this date in 1965, and it was hosted by Capitol Records. So this is the Beatles, the Ticket to Ride. Have a beautiful day.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Wow, has it been that long?